You're going to answer a Daily Dozen question one of these days.
Hey, I knew Oral Hershiser.
Was the Dodgers?
The Dodgers, nice. Yeah. Come on. That's my era. That's like when I kind of paid attention to sports.
Oh, is that your era or is that one tidbit?
I know a few things from baseball around circa 1989.
Welcome to our Film Fathers podcast, the definitive podcast about fatherhood, film, and fatherhood in film. This is Jelani, and with me as always are two guys who can go on hitting your spot all night long, Martin and Brady.
You just said don't shoot him, right? Well, I didn't. I choked him. Easy, look. If you ain't want him killed, why'd you leave him with me?
A man once told me that you step out of your door in the morning and you are already in trouble. The only question is, are you on top of that trouble or not?
This week, we ease out of Noir-vember with Easy Rollins narrating the story played by the incomparable Denzel Washington. With Devil in a Blue Dress, we see vintage Denzel playing a vintage character in a vintage-style movie. How does this movie hold up in the Noir-verse?
I think pretty good. This is only my second time seeing it. I only watched it for the first time. I think maybe last year for Noir-vember, just because it's always one that's been on the list.
You were freelancing?
Yeah, I was going off. I watched an additional movie other than what we have for homework every week. I enjoyed it. I think I could pretty much watch Denzel in anything, though. I think he saves it, and there are parts of the story that are really good. It's not a perfect movie, but it's an enjoyable one, especially for me who really loves film noir.
Yeah. Brady, had you seen it?
I had not. Okay. This is the first time for me. Definitely aware of it. This was out there. I'm going to assume that the noirness of it all deterred me along the way. if I've learned anything over our time doing the pod and Martin forcing me into all the noir. So much noir. I would think that probably is what I probably saw. Like, oh, this looks like it's from the 50s, and I was like, out.
47.
I would guess, but
that's okay.
But I was, I don't know. I don't think it's great. I do think he was pretty good, and that's not going to shock a lot of people. But
right.
I don't
think what I'm saying.
The movie itself is really much to Brett get too excited about. Like, I don't feel like I was missing much by not seeing it, mm-hmm. but obviously happy to, add it to the proverbial queue and knock it out.
I was happy to see Cheadle, like I remember that
surprise.
The first time and I forgot again this time that he was in it, but I'm like, oh yeah, he plays this great character. And it's gotta be an early one for him, right?
Yeah. I was curious about that. Cause I was trying to think when he popped up, I'm like, oh man, I'm like, what do I know him from? Like, what do I know him from in the first thing? And for me,
it's, Boogie Nights and then Out of Sight.
Two years later.
Yeah.
And 3 years later, Jelani, did you know Cheadle? Or I don't know, maybe when you saw this, but, Martin, I will say this, you did know him prior. You just didn't know it.
Yeah.
And that's because he was in 39 episodes
Fresh
of Picket Fences.
Yeah, I've seen all of Picket Fences, man.
D.A. John Littleton. So he was in front of us when we were young. We just didn't know it.
Didn't recognize him.
At 13, 14 years old.
Maybe that's why it just feels right when I see Cheadle on the screen. I love him.
I'm like, I saw that and I'm like, wow, I feel like I can't even get my brain there, but I mean, for sure. I mean, we definitely saw him before that. But from a movie standpoint, this is, unless you saw Things to Do in Denver When You're Dead.
I know that movie, yeah.
That was the same year. Okay. But really, nothing to me is jumping out as anything that was going to be, you'd know him from, right?
Jelani, had you seen this before?
Yeah, I had watched this before, and it was one of the things I wanted to do when we watched this was not only kind of get a different take on the noir aspect. But
I thought he was going to say, when it's one of the things I wanted to do in Denver when I was dead.
Before I died.
Before he died.
But was to not only get a different take on the noir aspect, but also revisit Cheadle's character, because I thought he enhanced the movie. Like, yeah, it was going along really fine. Did. It was going along great. And then he pops up and you're just like, yeah, that's the friend that everybody wants, but nobody needs. Because, you know, he's always going to have your back, but he's going to do some shit that's going to get you into trouble. And you're just like, what the fuck, dude?
How much do you think the Rounders character of Worm is based on Mouse?
A little bit of Mouse.
A little bit of Mouse.
Pulling a little bit from it. A
little
right?
bit.
Or and even then, I remember people saying that's like based on an early Scorsese movie, Mean Streets, where De Niro plays Johnny Boy or something Boy, plays like that friend. That's exactly what you just described. You know, that everybody kind of wants, and he's fun to have around, but. He's fun to have around until he's not.
Right.
Until he shoots the wrong person or, you know, gets a big gambling debt and you have to vouch for him, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, he comes in at the right time, right? And then, yeah, shoots a guy and lets him run out, shoots Frank Green.
Yeah, exactly. Just ready to go off at any moment. And you're just like, yeah, I need somebody who will have my back. But, you know, he's such a loose cannon that you can't.
At what cost?
Yes.
And how tense was that scene when he's drunk and he pulls the gun and he pulls the other gun and he's like, do I got him? He's like, yeah, you got him. Just sit back down, though. I thought that was a great, great scene. And Denzel's just always so, so cool. He's always so good.
Well, so that was my early note, right? Like right as the movie's starting, I'm kind of taking it in and I'm like, oh, okay. So Denzel's narrating. Denzel's telling the story. And I'm like, man. Can't really go wrong there. You know, like that's a great start to a movie is Denzel setting everything up for us. And I would obviously his storied career, but this is right in that wheelhouse of like absolutely crushing.
Yeah.
You know, and in his prime, I feel like it's possible to say, I mean, it's so early in his prime is either 25 years long and I don't know but
yeah, I mean, he hasn't gotten out of it yet, so
it felt to me like this could have been a risk for him.
So was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Malcolm X was 92,
correct?
Yeah, so at that point, right, like honestly,
Glory was 89. So, I mean,
yeah, that was when he pops on the scene, right? But I feel like Malcolm X was at the point when everybody was like, oh, we can pretty much give this guy anything and he'll kill it. And so,
yeah, I mean, really, like, after Glory, nothing really changes in terms of, like, anything you're going to be too excited about. And then tell Malcolm X.
Yeah.
When did you do Ricochet? Was that 91?
Ricochet was 91.
Yeah, I remember seeing that when I was like about 10. Yeah,
I don't know that movie, so I apologize for if I.
John Lithgow plays a psycho.
Denzel is a cop that puts him away, and then becomes the DA, and Lithgow gets out and hunts him down.
6.2 on the scale. So
yeah, that's about right.
I didn't think I was missing much there, but
yeah, it's not that high, but it's not that low either. You know,
but Malcolm X turns into. Pelican Brief in 93, Philadelphia in 93, Crimson Tide in 95. I don't know Virtuosity, but I assume one of these going to tell me.
Sid 6.7?
Russell Crowe.
Russell
Crowe? 5.5.
5.5. Jelani, do the Crimson Tide line.
Chief of the Watch, float the buoy.
I don't know why, I just love the way he says it.
I don't either. But... You know, so it's kind of right in this like crazy run for him, and that's what I do feel like. Maybe I'm wrong, but to make a noir style movie in there feels like almost an unnecessary risk. And I would argue the movie itself is not anything that impressive, but maybe at the time it was viewed otherwise.
I think like the interesting part about this film is. It probably was the start of a potential run for this author, like the Walter Mosley series and the Easy Rollins storyline. And you throw Denzel in there kind of just to see what happens with it, see if it kicks off. And obviously they didn't make any more, but I think...
Well, they said that was because of the lack of success.
Yeah. And
they said, like, there was definitely could have been, it could have turned into something more. So, yeah, I guess to that point, maybe it's the opportunity was there to, whatever, become a franchise or... Yeah.
But, you know, you had L.A. Confidential a few years later, which we just talked about.
Well, later, right, but it's like, you sound like you're
I mean, that won Academy Awards, so you would think that there could have been an opportunity to do a sequel for this with, like, a resurgence in, hey, old yeah. Hollywood film noir in the late 90s, but it's just, I mean, maybe by that point, just Denzel was into doing other things, and it's just never materialized, but I totally agree with you, Jelani. I felt like this was a good first Easy Rollins story, and we could have definitely seen more. I don't think it's too late. I think it'd be awesome to do maybe one of the later ones. I don't know how many books there are, or how old, if he stays the same age, or, you know, like if it's like a James Bond character where he's always the same age, or if it's something where you could be like, okay, now it's 20 years, 30 years later.
Yeah.
And what, you know, the end of his career, like a private investigator.
That's what he said at the end. He would potentially look at being like a private, you know, buy some real estate and
be a private dick.
Yep.
The other thing about it is, though, up until recently, Denzel had never made a sequel. So, he never had the idea of like being tied into one character for a long period of time.
Yeah.
So
maybe that's why.
That's one of the reasons why. Like, I think if they did try to go back to this character of Easy Rollins and the private investigator in the film noir, like you might just recast it, right, and cast a younger actor, maybe a John
Boyega.
Dare I say,
John? Is it his son, John David? Right.
Yeah, I don't know. That seems a little too on the nose.
too much? All right.
But
what movie did he first do a sequel for?
The Equalizers.
Ah.
The Equalizer franchise is the first ones that he ever
just
did.
Just too much money? They offered him too much money?
Just had to.
Couldn't say no.
Plus, you also work, once you start working with directors, right? Like, when you get to a level where he's at, you know... You can almost pick the director that you're going to work with, and if that director is tied to the movie and you like, I want to work with him, because Antoine Fuqua is the director of the Equalizers, and he's worked with him a couple of times, most notably on
Training Day, right?
Yeah. And then I think Tony Scott was another one that he worked with a lot, but Tony Scott passed away, so.
Yeah.
Martin, you mentioned John David.
Yeah.
John David Washington. He's in the movie.
Is he one of the kids in the push cart?
He's a kid, a boy with a toy rifle. He's in the movie.
I do. That was him. That's wild. I got to go back.
he's in Malcolm X as a student in a classroom, and then he's in this movie as well. And then he's not in another movie until 2017. So it was take your son to work day, and
that's awesome. What do you guys think of the plot? You know, like was it too convoluted?
I got a question for you, Martin. Yeah. This is on the bigger scope of all of it. So watching this question came to my mind. Why make this or any movie? Why make a noir style film? Like, is it the language or the ideals from, like, that time frame that, like, allow for certain plot devices to be able to be driven home or what? Like, if you're out to make a movie, why set it in the 40s or why set it in the 50s or whatever the case may be?
Yeah.
As I was watching it, I was like, why is this set here? Like, why aren't we just making is it just because of the
why not make it modern?
Yeah, I guess.
Well, so yeah, the
maybe
fair,
because
fair
I don't
question
see the
you're saying in the 90s
noir.
You're saying now they definitely think that for the most part film noir is over, right? It was over in the 50s. Like, they the last one I think we we talked about it, was we did it last year, A Touch of Evil, was like the one of the last, like, capped like the end of it. But I think the reason to do it, like LA Confidential or this movie, is A, they're both based on books, and B, it's a throwback. It's for movie lovers, and I don't know. There's something about that time period where there was, you know, you didn't have phones, like cell phones or anything fancy. So it makes it easier to have some of that the older elements to it. I guess you could. They've done it many times where you modernize it, but sometimes it takes away. You're not able to make some of these convoluted or overly complex plots because everyone could just call anybody at any time. Find out where they are, do GPS. You end up with enemy of the state, right? Where they find them all the you know, at any given moment. So
it wouldn't have been hard to do that in 1995.
What wouldn't have been hard?
I mean, we weren't all rocking cell phones in 95. Like, this is a time frame that they could have easily made a movie where he's trying to figure out where this girl is without.
But I think part of the storyline, right, set in the time period it is, makes it a challenge, right? Because in 95, like, if you just had a black detective or, you know, a guy looking for a girl, you know, who was mixed race, like, it's not exactly really that big of a deal, right? You just go out and find her. She doesn't have to hide.
Oh, here, I didn't know that everything was solved in 95.
But... Oh, I'm not saying it's solved, but I think it would be much easier for him to find her.
But the politician, you know, not being able to marry her because she's mixed race also wouldn't be a big deal. But in the 40s, that plot point makes sense.
Right.
And can we talk about Jennifer Beals a little bit?
Absolutely.
We can.
Flashdance. big fan. I think there wasn't enough of her in this movie, but
what does she do?
I kind of knew. I know.
What's the benefit? I don't know if I see anything. Like, literally nothing. She literally nothing to the table.
I think she was cast. I believe she is mixed race.
I was gonna say, just solely because she's mixed race.
That's partially because of what it is, and because again, she
Daphne
could,
Monet.
She could pass. You know, she could be passing, right? So, are you guys familiar with the paper bag test?
No. Is that a skin color thing?
Yeah. So basically, like back in the day, they said if you were darker than a brown paper bag, you were considered black. So even if you were mixed race, but you didn't appear to be mixed race, like my kids, they would not view you as black. So you could move around and you could go to different circles. You could interact. But I think part of that, again, like they mentioned in the movie, is what her challenge was she didn't really feel like she fit in anywhere. Right. So, you know, her hiding out was just because she was trying to figure out where do I fit? And then same with Easy. Yeah. Like, he was trying to figure out, where do I fit? I can't work at the airline factory anymore, but I don't have a job. And, you know, somebody's asking me to find somebody and they're paying me $1,000. Like, yeah, I'll go find them and then get myself into some trouble that I got to call my friend Mouse from Houston to come help me out of.
And I liked the ending of it too, like where he knew... He didn't want to tell her what he thought was going to happen, but he knew it when he was driving her over to see, I forget the politician's name. Yeah. And I just thought that was, I thought that was handled well. And it was, you know, kind of a heartbreaking ending, but it was a good story, you know, decent twist. It's kind of not quite as much of a twist as like a Chinatown, but, or like a reveal, But still a good one, you know, where you finally kind of figure out what the key is or what everyone's going on. Because I always find these, what I like about these stories is that they are so, just so complicated, convoluted, and you're trying to figure out how every character fits, and you're always looking at the guy on screen, right? Denzel seems to have it all together, kind of knows more than we do, or kind of figures it out a little bit quicker than we do. I'm watching the movie. And I thought the guy that, you know, the big politician, whatever, I forget the actor's name, but we've seen him in other stuff before. The guy that pulls up in the car. He, you know, he just reminded me of the Big Lebowski. You know, just with a big fat guy pulling up in a car. You know, I don't know. I just like all those elements of it too. You know, the influence on something like the Big Lebowski too, or when they spoof it almost. They spoof these movies.
Maury Shaken. He's ironically, he's in War Games.
We were talking about that off mic.
My cousin Vinny, War Games.
My cousin Vinny, that's right. He doesn't make instant grits.
Right.
That's how I know him from.
No self-respect.
No self-respect in Southerner. So yeah, as far as plots go, I thought it was a little, it took a little while to get going. But then once it did, it was good.
We got a purpose for this rogue tree trimmer in the neighborhood.
That I didn't understand. That I do want to. I'm glad you brought that up.
Thought there would be some payoff at some point.
That has to be something.
So like, my only thought there was that he was going to go around chopping down the trees and then having people pay him. He's like, oh, I chopped down that tree. You owe me $5 or whatever. And it's nobody like asked you to do that. Yeah, like the guys who come and spray your windshield.
He's
and,
in like 10 scenes.
I don't know why I found it funny when Denzel's just chasing him off. It was stupid, and I'll admit that, but I did also find it kind of funny.
I just didn't really understand.
Leave my damn trees alone.
What I was missing about that.
Yeah, I didn't get it either.
He's and you know that actor too is like.
He's been in a lot of things.
Yeah, I mean, you may not know his name, Barry Shabaka Henley, but definitely has been Collateral, The Terminal, Rush Hour, Stolen.
Often plays a cop.
Yes,
I think he's a cop in Collateral. Well, another cameo that I wanted to just call out because I don't know if you guys recognized her, but the door woman at the illegal nightclub.
The girl who works down in like the
shop.
Yeah, she was the one yelling early, like right when they rolled up,
right.
About the dude. Yeah. No, I didn't. I don't think I knew who that was.
Okay, so the last time we saw her, she was trying to figure out what an L train sounds like.
Yeah, she's one of the marshals in The Fugitive.
Yes.
Same year.
Yes.
Right? Wasn't that 95?
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
She also played Rose on Lost.
Yeah, in Lost. Yes.
Rose and Bernard.
Yep.
I was like, oh, that's right. That's where I see
I did her. Recognize her in the beginning, but it wasn't until you said that it clicked. Yeah, that she was in The Fugitive.
Interesting. No, I did not pick up on that.
Yeah.
I did kind of hate to see, what was the bar owner's name? The one that Mouse shot?
Joppy.
Don Cheadle shot? Joppy.
Joppy?
Yeah, that was... Because, you know, Joppy, he says, like, we're friends, you know? And, yeah, he may have kind of screwed Easy over a little bit, but Easy didn't want him to die. And so that was, yeah, that was a little bad scene.
He had to get his dad's marble back to him.
So we've seen him in a couple films. We've talked about him. Brady's a big fan. If Tom Sizemore comes looking for you, you just leave, right? You don't answer that call.
Good Sizemore.
Yeah, this was good Sizemore. He does play that kind of like off, not just a guy that you know would go a little crazy on you.
He's
pretty well.
Right, he's on the edge at all times.
Yeah, he just looks on the edge.
Yep.
That's a good way to put it. Yep.
Yeah.
That's
it.
Yep. He is he's great.
But
played that role well.
Yeah, if he ever comes in and he's like Jelani Tatum, like never heard of him. just keep it moving.
Yeah, no, Sizemore, young looking Sizemore. I enjoyed him, but overall, I just really felt like the movie was kind of just fine. And although Denzel is just, he was doing it all right at that point.
Yeah, I think this was the kind of like, hey, I've made it, and now I can make whatever. And maybe he had a passion for, you know, a film noir. Liked that growing up and wanted to do something similar, and so took a swing. You know, didn't go as successfully as for everybody, but you know, this one kind of just sits there and it's like, hey, maybe somebody could revisit this at a later date.
I think there's more meat on the bone, so to speak, for me.
More apples in the trees, unless they're getting cut down.
Unless they're getting chopped down.
I was trying to look and see if there's anything. I mean, it's a 6.8 on IMDb, so it's not even close to the Virtuosity rating or The Preacher's Wife.
Why? What's Virtuosity rating?
5.5. Pretty bad.
Yeah, but Virtuosity is not great. But it's, again, it's early Russell Crowe.
It is above. Wow, it's rated above. It's above Courage Under Fire. It's above The Pelican Brief.
Mm. Virtuosity is 32% Rotten Tomatoes. So yeah, that's oof.
I'm trying to. I definitely think I enjoyed The Pelican Brief more than this.
Yeah,
although
I really
admittedly,
like Pelican Brief.
I had a little more buy-in with that one, considering I'd read the book. You know, yeah. You know how Martin and I do. But in general, like I definitely saw Courage Under Fire. I don't remember it, but it's a better than The Siege, which I feel like I felt like was an underrated movie.
I think The Siege is maybe a tough watch
now, good.
But I think it was pretty decent at the time.
Why not? Why do you say that?
I think just some of the way that they treat the Muslim community in that. I think
they aren't they like yeah.
Got it.
Like they cast a broad net. Just because, you know, one person attacked and claimed to be Muslim and stuff like that. It was just like, they just like, oh, yeah, we're just going to sweep them all up and throw them in internment camps. Like, not your best look, guys. Is it higher than The Bone Collector?
Same.
Oh, same as The Bone Collector. Yeah.
What's the one? Is it Fallen? When is Fallen?
Oh, Fallen 7.0.
98.
That was a 98.
Yeah.
98
yeah.
was Fallen.
That was pretty good.
He Got Game and The Siege.
I think
Is
Fallen's
that Elias
underrated.
Koteas? Does that yes. have Casey Jones in it?
Casey Jones.
Yeah, in Fallen. Yeah.
John Goodman.
John Goodman for sure.
Gandolfini.
Yeah, that movie wasn't terrible. I remember liking it. We got off topic.
Yeah, a little bit. I'm noir'd out. My mind
yeah,
is wandering.
This, we put a cap on it. I don't know that we're going to do it next year. I think we kind of
no more
just,
noir.
Yeah, maybe just
noir. Thanks.
Maybe just like one movie, or one or two or something.
We were so close. Martin walked to the door and he's like, you know, I'm not done. Actually, we're done. We're not doing it next year. Well, at least one.
We'll do one.
Are there any left?
That's what I was saying. Like, I don't know that there's any major ones that we have to do, other than some old ones, which I won't subject you to. But
you've done that already.
Yeah.
We're still
again.
Not, yeah, exactly right. But we'll figure it out.
As always, don't keep peeing on our heads and tell us it's raining. Just like, follow, and subscribe to Our Film Fathers wherever you listen. Thanks, and go to bed.